The Fan on Demand.
Welcome to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe, for the next hour. We're going to talk mixed martial arts, UFC, Bellator, Strikeforce, and everything in between on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590, and Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 960 in Calgary, Alberta. Props to our pals out there in Calgary and the surrounding region. Once again, my co-host in studio is Tyler Mason. Tyler, insane weekend of mixed martial arts. Last weekend it was a complete, you know, gong show for yours truly, because I was moving from one address to another. I'm in the middle of moving to two separate addresses, obviously from my current or my old address to my in-laws, while my current house is being finished off mid-August. So the day of the move, you know, it was the weigh-ins for, you know, UFC Live Marquardt versus Story, and instead it turned into a gong show with Dana White firing Nate Marquardt, and I had no idea. I'm sitting there unloading boxes and taking apart furniture, putting stuff in a pod and putting stuff into a truck and putting stuff into storage, and, you know, my phone's on silent, and Sportsnet's calling me nonstop. I'm getting texts and emails and Twitter updates. I have no idea what's going on, and I find out at the end of the day that, you know, Nate Marquardt's been fired by Dana White. I said, uh-oh. They want me to come in. I better figure this out real quick. And just, it was such a gong show of a weekend last weekend. But, you know, Marquardt gets, you know, fired from the UFC, replaced by Charlie Brenneman, who had an exceptional performance against Ricky Story. But before we get to that, when you first heard that news with Nate Marquardt, by the way, we're going to have Jeff Rahoman give us an update on what the latest is with the Nate Marquardt situation. But when you first heard the news, what went through your mind?
Well, I immediately thought back to, you know, his past with performance-enhancing drugs. I mean, he had come out and defended himself against those charges before, but, I mean, that's the first thing that always pops in your mind. And then the next I thought, you know, about possibly there was a diuretic being involved, because, you know, for someone who's such a large middleweight to move down to 170, I thought maybe that was an issue. And, you know, things got really murky with a lot of double talk from people. You know, Dana White couldn't say anything. Pretty much anyone that was at the fight couldn't say anything. The Pennsylvania Commission couldn't say anything. So speculation kind of ran wild on the internet. And yeah, so, I mean, those were my first thoughts. And I thought the funniest part about this was Marquardt was the story going into the card.
Yep.
But coming out, we actually, I think, got two better stories with Brenneman, and the main event switched to Pat Barry and Chuck Congo, because I don't think you could have had a better main event than Congo Barry.
That was literally insane. I mean, there was Anderson Silva and Chael Sonnen. We saw Todd Duffy and Mike Russell. We saw, was it Scott Smith and
Pete Sell.
Incredible comebacks in fights when you think guys are just, there's no way they're going to win the fight. But that was insane. Pat Barry, I mean, on the surface, looking at it when I watched the fight at home, I would have stepped in to stop that fight. But Dan Mergliotta, the referee, has the best view out of everyone. So he obviously made the right call. On the surface, when you watch it, that fight could have been stopped once or twice for Pat Barry. Obviously, he saw something in Chuck Congo that says, no, this guy's still, he's still there. He's rocked, but he's not rocked bad enough where I've got to stop this fight. And lo and behold, boom, Chuck Congo hits him with a right hand, follows it up again with another right hand. Pat Barry is seeing cuckoo birds coming out of a clock. That, I mean, we were talking off air how that should have been fight of the night, because the fight of the night went to the undercard fight between Nick Lentz and Charles Oliveira, and you got your reasonings why. But I mean, the most improbable comeback and recovery that I think I've ever seen in a mixed martial arts fight, because Chuck Congo was gone. He was out. I mean, to me, it looked like he was toast. That fight should have been stopped. Lo and behold, he lands those two monster right hands, and you just got a feel for Pat Barry after seeing that.
Yeah, and I, like we were saying off air, you know, it reminded me of Edgar Maynard, but condensed into one round
yeah,
with a finish. I mean, Edgar Maynard, too, is one of my favorite fights. And, you know, I think it was a week or two ago, and I was saying, you know, I know when a fight is really great, when the whole newsroom erupts.
I heard about that.
And everyone erupts. Like, people who don't usually watch MMA were screaming and, you know, people just, everyone couldn't believe what was happening. I couldn't believe what was happening, because even Dan Mergliotta almost stepped in.
Yeah.
Like, he jumped, like he pounced like the referees do, to about to step in, and then he kind of like tiptoed around and pivoted around the fighter so he didn't actually touch them or interfere with the fight. And it was a good move, because, you know, when Congo got knocked down the first time, he continued to roll. He continued to move,
yeah,
right? And the second time he grabbed onto legs. I mean, The second time I thought was more in favor of stoppage than the first. But the first looked so much more vicious because Barry was just going nuts with those right hands. Unbelievable. I was shocked. I was sitting there. I'm like, we have to sound this up for connecting. Yeah. And then you just let this fight run because it was so amazing. You couldn't script it better.
Well, so, you know, the difficulties I had last weekend, I was obviously moving, like I said, and I wasn't able to see the fight at all live. And my iPhone, when I finally sat down on my couch to start reviewing the fight and trying to catch up real time through my PVR, my Twitter was going absolutely ballistic on my iPhone. I said, what's going on here? And I kind of looked over and I saw a couple of tweets that were saying knockout and comeback of the century. And I immediately just turned my iPhone over. I don't want to see what was going on. And then as I was going through the script, for those that don't know, I usually generally can type my scripts at home and I can voice from home. I've got a nice little studio set up that I could voice and send it into our guys, to you or to Jacob, our producer, Jimmy or Joe. And I was looking through the script and Jacob had left a note saying specifically, let the end of the fight play itself. And I thought to myself, what is he talking about? You don't, that could be forever. Like, what is it? There must have been a crazy knockout. So I stopped typing and I was watching the fight and I was like, oh my goodness. Now I know what everyone was talking about. I was actually watching Connected before I went to bed after watching everything. And it was Ken Reed and Ivanka were sitting in the row getting ready to do the Connected show, the late show. And apparently Ken was yelling and screaming in his high-pitched voice. He said he had a high-pitched voice that they should have been stopping the fight, stop the fight, stop the fight, stop the fight. And then he went silent, apparently, because Congo came back and did that incredible, incredible recovery with those two punches that he was like, wow, glad I'm not a referee in mixed martial arts. And even Ivanka was surprised left and right saying, wow, that was insane.
Yeah, and even Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg were saying this fight should be stopped after the first knockout or first knockdown. And you know, when you listen, if you go back and listen to the sound immediately before Congo knocks out Barry, Goldberg and Rogan are saying he's in trouble. You know, Congo's in deep trouble here. He's in a lot of trouble, and then he pulls the knockout. So I mean, it's shocked everyone. It was completely surprising. Even if you look at the spectators ringside in a couple of replays, even the ring girls, I mean, everybody was shocked by this. It was unbelievable. And I think even if Marquardt's story was the main event, it couldn't live up to this. This was very favorable for the UFC.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Marquardt was suspended for having high levels of nandrolone, an anabolic steroid, way back in 2005 or 2006. So when Dana White was referring to that in the post fight or in the little thing he did on the television station, where you know we give people a second chance, and that's when you know my red flag started going up and saying, or white flag, and I was like, wait a second, here we go. Because when people were asking me, the funny thing is you know Sportsnet and the Fan 590, everybody was contacting me, and like I said, when I finally realized that everyone was contacting me, I felt like saying, I don't ever take vacation, you know, but give me a chance. I've got to move, not understanding or realizing the severity of the story. And then when I finally saw, and Jacob actually called me and he was like, Joe, listen, you some way, somehow, can you get on this? Call your sources. I said, well, what happened? And he explained to me what happened. I said, oh my goodness. I said, let me call you back. I started calling around, Tyler, and I'm calling this guy and this person and that manager and this training partner, and I'm just going crazy calling people, and you know nobody was giving me information. And I started looking at some of my peers out there, and no one else was getting information. I said, something's bad going on here. Then I started getting phone calls from sources that I hadn't called yet asking me, hey, what do you know? What's going on? I'm like, wait a second. I'm supposed to be calling you to get this information. Nobody knew what was going on. And like I said, you know, Jeff Verhoeven will give us an update a little bit later to let us know exactly what the latest is and what Nate Marquardt, what the scenario is. But again,
Dana White only believes in second chances if you're a heavyweight. Then he believes in fourth chances.
Yes. Yes. Well, Dana, I mean, listen, what's good for business?
Little Josh Barnett.
Yes. Yes. What's good for business is good for Dana White and the UFC. That's just the bottom line. I mean, you've seen what he said about Chael Sonnen as an example, you know, or anyone that's been suspended. We're going to honor what the commission say. But this is a different scenario because, you know, Nate Marquardt had 6 weeks apparently to prove that whatever was, you know, found or whatever was done, to prove that everything was fine, to clear it up. He didn't do it, but he was the main event on a free televised card, which kind of screws the UFC because they were promoting it heavily. Nate Marquardt, Nate Marquardt, Nate Marquardt, Nate Marquardt, main event. And when it comes to business like that, and all of a sudden you've got to change the main event for a nationally televised or international free show, that doesn't look good for the UFC because the networks come down and say, oh, man, we've been advertising this like crazy. But like you said, luckily, Pat Barry and Chet Congo went from co-main event to main event and put on that exceptional performance. Could have been the best 2 minutes and 39 seconds we've ever seen in a fight. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, but that dropped down Rick Story from his fight to Charlie Brenneman. Charlie Brenneman steps in for Nate Marquardt, and let's be honest. I mean, Charlie Brenneman was a massive, massive underdog, stepping in on literally 48 hours notice. Apparently, he knew 8 days in advance, because this Marquardt thing has been going on for a while, but he knew, you know, even if it's just 8 days, regardless, he lost his original opponent, TJ Grant, Canadian, who fell ill. So Brenneman, you know, and it was a funny site out there, I think it was fightlinker.com, that said, you know, hopefully Brenneman didn't go nuts on the buffet when he realized he wasn't fighting anymore to catch up on eating, because obviously these guys don't eat much when they get close to camp. So he was a massive underdog, especially with Rick Story. And I know if people don't know this, Tyler right now has this extremely sad look in his eye, because Rick Story is his boy. He absolutely, you know, respects and adores Rick Story. He's one of the best fighters that he's ever seen. But after what Rick did against Thiago Alves, we all figured he's going to cut this cage off and he's going to dictate what's going to happen in this fight. But Charlie Brenneman said otherwise.
Well, Brenneman showed how you beat a wrestler, and it's you basically out-wrestle him. I mean, I think George St. Pierre kind of set the precedent for that. I mean, Matt Hughes was a dominant welterweight forever because he was the best wrestler out there in MMA, and, you know, GSP decided, I'm going to be a better wrestler. And you can really see when a wrestler's on his back how much trouble they can be in. And I don't think Rick Story was, you know, he's not bad off his back. I mean, he was very good at maintaining his guard, but he wasn't aggressive. He wasn't attacking a lot of things. And, you know, Brenneman had the defense to stay away. So it was a pretty amazing underdog story. I mean, Dana White was likening it to Rocky Balboa, you know, getting the chance. There's no title on the line.
Yeah.
But Rick Story was definitely one of the contenders that was quickly moving up the ranks.
Yeah.
I mean, if he got the John Fitch fight that he wanted, he was
a fight
away from a title shot. So he was one or two fights. I would say one, because people would want more new blood, you know, to fight George St. Pierre. They don't want to see him fighting the same contenders. I think he was like one fight away from a title shot, and Brenneman comes in there and just takes it all away.
Okay, so you just stole the words out of my mouth. I think Joe Rogan said it best when he said he just took all that momentum away and gave it to himself. Before this fight, where did you have Ricky Story in your top 10 welterweights in the world?
He was obviously in the top 10. In the world, I'd say he would be close to top 5, but, you know, not quite.
Okay.
But, you know, like I said, I mean, he was close enough where he was one or two fights away from a title shot. So, I mean, he had to be in that kind of upper echelon of the top 10.
Well, the reason why I asked that question is coming into the fight. I mean, you got to look at who beats who, when they beat them and stuff like that. I mean, I had Rick Story coming into this fight at number 6 in the world. Okay. With that being said, Charlie Brenneman defeats Rick Story, who, you know, on my record is number 6 in the world. Where does that put Charlie Brenneman now?
Because of where Charlie Brenneman was before, I would put him ahead of Rick Story, but I don't.
But then,
like,
that bumps down Thiago Alves, Josh Koscheck, Martin Kam, and Diego Sanchez.
Yeah, I don't think that necessarily applies. I mean, it's a lot of its style makes fights. I mean, a Charlie Brenneman wrestler might do well against a Thiago Alves because he'd be able to get him down a lot, but we haven't seen that fight. You know, the body of work that Thiago Alves has, you know, knocking out Carl Parisian or Matt Hughes, and, you know, his fights against you know, top tier guys like John Fitch and George St. Pierre, and lasting the distance. I mean, that speaks a lot more volumes than I think, you know, losing once to Rick Story and then, you know, Rick Story losing to somebody else. I mean, he didn't lose to Charlie Brenneman.
Why
he lost to Rick Story.
I hate rankings.
It's true. I mean, you know, I use Fight Matrix. We've talked about this before. I let a computer kind of figure it out. But what's really interesting is on Fight Matrix, Charlie Brenneman was ranked 80. Or actually, he's ranked like 97.
Wow.
And Rick Story is ranked about 11. Because of this, Charlie Brenneman is now ranked 17, and Rick Story is ranked 20. So it was there's a massive switch. Like,
yeah.
Charlie Brenneman moves up 80 spots,
yeah.
And that just shows you the magnitude of what an upset this was. I mean, going in, I didn't think Rick Story was going to be out-wrestled, and when he was taken down and put on his back, I mean, I thought it was going to be a long night.
All right, coming up after the break, we'll continue to talk about the UFC live show that happened last Sunday. Remember, we will have an update from Jeff Verhoeven regarding the Nate Marquardt story. You're listening to The Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590 in Toronto, and Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 960 in Calgary.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other. The Fan Club. Join online at fan590.com.
Welcome back to The Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, Strikeforce, Bellator, everything in between on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590 in Toronto, as well as The Fan 960 in Calgary. Tyler and I, for those that don't know and you can't see, you can't hear, off air, we're still debating what to do with Charlie Brenneman. Where does he belong in the top 10? And all kinds of different things. Where does Czech Congo, who's next for Czech Congo? And then we continue to talk about the rest of the card, John Howard versus Matt Brown. I mean, Matt Brown was coming off a three-fight losing streak. John Howard, a Muay Thai, I guess, can you say specialist in Muay Thai? Of course you can. But leg kick, leg kick, leg kick, I'm going to take Matt Brown down. Now, Matt Brown has a history. I know you're smiling. Matt Brown has a history of being submitted, which technically is a good idea. But don't you think John Howard is a better striker than Matt Brown standing up?
Definitely with the leg kicks. I mean, he was using a lot of leg kicks in this fight. And it was surprising, though. He was out-wrestling Matt Brown as well. And one thing that kind of interests me is after the fight, there wasn't much controversy over the decision.
It could have went either way.
I thought it was an extremely close fight.
Yep.
And when they announced Matt Brown as the winner, it surprised me a little. And what surprised me more is that there was no discussion over whether the fight could have gone either way. It was just like, oh yeah, that's the right decision. And I thought, wow, I thought it was a lot closer than that.
Yeah. How much of it do you start, when you start looking at judging, okay, and you and I have discussed judging at length, are you starting to see a bit of a trend where judges reward, or I guess, I mean, like Howard was failing at takedown attempts, so they were rewarding Matt Brown for defending. So don't you try and sort of reward the guy trying to get the fight to where it needs to be? It's almost like he lost this fight because he couldn't get those takedowns that he wanted.
I think you have to reward defense in certain instances. I mean, we talked about it last week with Overeem and Verdum. I think in that instance, you should reward defense because it was so overwhelming that Overeem was using so much defense to dictate that fight. Whereas in this fight, you know, he was stuffed sometimes, but he was also successful others. So, I mean, the defense wasn't so suffocating that, you know, John Howard couldn't actually get any takedowns off. So in that case, I don't think you should be rewarding defense as much.
Okay. It to me, was one of those scenarios. I'm trying to remember how I scored the fight, because I think I did score it for Howard. But again, it was one of those fights where I could see where some of the judges, you know, would sway it over to Matt Brown. I'm not losing sleep over it, but you and I always, you know, generally have a caveat before we make our predictions. We can't take into consideration what a fighter is going to do during a fight or what his game plan is, because coming into the fight or going into any fight, you and I will look at it on paper and say, here's what this guy's strengths are. Here's where his opponent's weaknesses are. Here's where he should be taking the fight. Here's where this guy should be taking the fight. Or what to avoid. Coming into this fight, we both kind of agreed that John Howard needs to use his Muay Thai and just simply pick apart Matt Brown, because I don't think Matt Brown's skill set is up there with John Howard. He didn't.
I thought John Howard probably looked at his, you know, the last three fights that Matt Brown has lost due to submission and thought, you know what?
But make that plan B.
Yeah, I mean, he probably.
I would have made that. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, who are you and I to say what a guy should be doing in a cage? But just for the sake of conversation and argument, to me, it's John Howard should have been Muay Thai, Muay Thai, Muay Thai, Muay Thai. If for whatever reason his Muay Thai was losing to Matt Brown striking, his Muay Thai, because he was trading kick for kick with him, then go to plan B, then go to the striking. But he was winning, in my opinion.
Yeah, I maybe had more confidence in his submission game. I mean, like a George St. Pierre always says, I'm not going to fight where I'm strongest, I'm going to fight where they're weakest. Maybe he was taking that kind of strategy towards his fight, and he just kind of thought his submission game was a lot better than it was, or maybe he underestimated Matt Brown's submission defense. And I mean, you can game plan all you want, but you never really know what's going to happen in a fight until you get in the cage,
get punched in the face,
and everything kind of changes, because you have to react as well to what they're doing.
Are you surprised Howard was gassing at the end of the first round?
I was a little bit surprised, but I mean, Howard's kind of a stocky guy, welterweight.
What are you saying? Because we're the same height. I'm 5'7".
Well, as someone who's put on, you know, quite a bit of muscle lately, I can kind of attest to
how.
I can.
Tyler, the vein.
No. Mason. It can suck a lot of wind out of you. I mean, my cardio was pretty great before. I think I put a little too much weight on since then, and now I'm just sucking wind every time I train.
Does it have to do with the chicken wing feast you went on a couple weeks ago?
No, it doesn't. Does not have to do with the chicken wing feast.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is flat out lying on the air. All right. Matt Mitrione takes out Christian Moorcraft. Are you happy with the evolution of Matt Mitrione? Because I think he's on par. He's doing good. He's winning fights. The only issue that I have, well, there's a variety of issues that I have with Matt Mitrione's performance, because, but he's evolving as a fighter, so he's going to get better. Did you notice his head when he was throwing his punches and standing and training? He still has his chin out there with a big bullseye on it. He's not yet developed the technique where he's dropping the chin almost below his shoulder or shoulder length to protect it from guys throwing hooks and guys throwing straights.
Yeah, and I think a large part of Matt Mitrione's success is his athleticism.
I mean,
they discussed it on the podcast about how he's, like, you know, out sprinting Chris Lieben, and, you know, he's a former NFL player for 6 years. I mean, this was played up a lot, but I really think that is...
It's a work ethic.
I think it's also that's pretty much one of the reasons he's winning, because, I mean, in his past fights, I saw, you know, vast improvement. In this fight, I didn't really see as much improvement. I mean, his hands were a little bit more crisp, but I thought his guard looked better in other fights. Maybe it is just a testament to, you know, Moorcraft's abilities, but I wasn't as impressed with Mitrione, but he was pretty pinpoint with landing his power shots. And I mean, he wins again by stoppage, so he must be doing everything right.
Undercard. Tyson Griffin takes out Manuel Gamburian. It was a majority decision. I'll leave a caveat out there. I haven't seen these fights just yet, but I will, because I've got the DVD. And I'm going to watch them. Probably tonight. No, I can't tonight. I'll do it tomorrow. But I will watch these fights. So just for now, Tyson Griffin defeats Manuel Gamburi, majority decision. Joe Stevenson loses to Javier Vasquez, which you predicted Stevenson. I predicted Vasquez.
No, we both predicted Vasquez.
I completely disagree. You are a liar.
Let's check
again,
the tape.
It's twice.
We'll check the tape.
Twice. You know, you're probably right. Anyways, Javier wins. We all thought he was going to win. We'll say that. Joe Lauzon apparently put on exceptional performance. His boxing was great and his submission was ridiculous.
He destroyed Warburton. I mean, going to this fight, we discussed it.
Would it have been Kurtz coming party?
Well, I remember saying, you know, I think this is probably going to go to decision. I don't expect Lauzon to run through him like he did Gabe Rudiger. And you know what? He ran through him like he did Gabe Rudiger. I was completely wrong on that.
You were 13 minutes and 2 seconds off a decision, let's be honest.
But we both chose Joe Lauzon in this one. I mean, he looked amazing.
That's a fight I want to see, because even Dana was saying how his boxing looked phenomenal. And when Joe Lauzon's on. When he's off, you're kind of like, well... You know when the dog kind of tilts its head to the right? You're like, what just happened here? Expect more of him. Anyways, Daniel Roberts takes on Rich Antonito. Did you see this one coming? Because Antonito won.
I actually chose Roberts. You chose Antonito. I didn't see this coming. What the majority of the fight?
No, my heart chose Antonito. My head chose Roberts.
Oh, okay. I don't remember that. But, you really saw that, you know, Roberts couldn't get this to the ground. He was on the bottom at one point, but Antonio's wrestling was just too good for Roberts to get any kind of clean takedown on him. And by the second and third rounds, Roberts was fading. He was just gassing really hard. And I mean, it really was a testament to his chin. He took some really hard shots in the third round and didn't go down. So, you know, he lost, but he showed something in the loss.
Ricardo Lamas takes out Matt Grice, 441 of the first round, TKO, and Michael Johnson, he of Ultimate Fighter 13, finale fame. He was a finalist. He lost to Jonathan Brookins. He takes out Edward Falaloto via TKO at 442 of the first round. But the one fight that we're all talking about, because you and I are massive fans of Charles Oliveira, he takes out Nick Lentz, but apparently the fight has been ruled a no contest due to an illegal knee that set up the rear naked choke. You saw this fight. Break it down.
Well, I mean, Oliveira was obviously winning this fight before the illegal knee. It was a very illegal knee. I mean, Lentz had one knee down, and Oliveira just landed a really vicious knee to his face. I mean, it was obvious that it changed.
Why?
It was obvious that it changed the fight. I don't think he meant it. I think because Lentz was in the process of getting up, he probably figured that he was going to, you know, he was going to time it so that when Lentz put both feet on the ground to fully stand up, he would land that knee. It definitely changed the fight. I still think Oliveira was winning, and he was on his way to a win. He was out-positioning him on the bottom, outlanding him on the feet. It's unfortunate. Maybe we'll get a rematch down the line. I don't think they will do a rematch, but
I
think what comes out of this is Oliveira is still as impressive as we thought, and Nick Lentz is an extremely tough guy. I mean, he fought out of some really close submissions. There was a guillotine that looked like Oliveira was going to pop his head off, and he fought through it and continued on. So I think there's some positives to come out of this besides the no contest.
You are now officially Joe Silva. I'm giving you the title. You got a couple seconds here to discuss this, about 30 seconds. Do you do whatever you can to avoid Charles Oliveira and Edson Barboza from facing off against one another? Until you absolutely have to.
I think you do. And before I would have said you don't, you make them fight right away. But if you look at what happened with the John Jones, Ryan Bader, they kept them away until it meant a title shot. And if you look at Dos Santos, Cain Velasquez, they kept them away until it's an actual, the title's on the line. So I think as a fan, as someone who really wants to see these guys fight, yeah, put it on tomorrow. But if I was the guy who's in charge, it was my business. I wait till one of these guys has the title.
Build them.
And the other guy's been undefeated in the UFC and been super impressive. And you know what? Let's see these guys fight for a title.
I just fired you as Joel Silva. You're back to Tyler Mason, co-host of the Showdown. Who wins that fight?
I think Barbosa's a larger lightweight. I think Oliveira could easily move down to 45, even 35. I would guess.
Oliveira at 35.
I think he could. I mean, they were talking about him not cutting any weight at all. He just comes in at 55. And there are guys who make 35 that walk around 55. Dominic Cruz, as an example.
Which we will talk about in the next break.
Yeah, and I would say, you know what? I think I would go with Charles Oliveira. I think his stand-up's good enough to stick with Barbosa, and I think he's better on the ground. But the size...
Because we haven't seen anything from Barbosa. I just like Barboza's leg kicks. He's my boy right now. Both these guys are my boys at lightweight. I'm huge fans. But we're going to go back. We're going to have Jeff Verhoeven joining us in a couple of seconds to talk about the whole Nate Marquardt situation, which was the reason why some of these headlines happened this weekend. It was a crazy scenario, but Nate Marquardt did speak and give his thoughts. So, Jeff, give us a synopsis of what you know and what you heard and just leading up to this whole situation. Welcome back to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe Ferraro. Of course, my guest once again in studio is Tyler.
Yes.
Joe Silva Mason. Tyler, the liar Mason, because you lied in that last block. Don't lie.
I did not lie.
You did lie. You're lying, but lying.
No, I'm never lying.
All right, we're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, Strikeforce, Bellator, and now UFC 132 on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590 in Toronto, and of course, our pals out in Alberta, the Fan 960 in Calgary. We got to go to Calgary.
Go to Calgary. For sure. I got to travel all over the country.
Yeah, you want to get to see all the different sites? Have you traveled to Canada at all?
Only to the east. I've been through Quebec and Montreal.
I've hit every province with the exception, I think, of Saskatchewan. And I want to go out there because apparently there's a couple things brewing in Saskatchewan one day for MMA at the top echelon. But that's all I'm saying. All right, we're going to talk about UFC 132 going down at the MGM Grand this weekend. Dominic Cruz defending his title against Uriah Faber. We'll get to that prediction a little bit later on, but let's go at the very bottom. A bantamweight belt that was recently added. Jeff Hoagland against Donnie Walker.
Can I say one thing about this card?
No.
It's ridiculously stacked. This is a great card.
You just did.
This is a great card.
I love this card. I mean, it's one of those situations where... Here's the deal at UFC events. When we're doing a live preview show on Rogers Sportsnet, I bite my lip and I cringe because my job is to watch the fights, analyze them, and then give my thoughts on what happened, this and that. When we're doing these live shows, I can't do that because, you know, my commitment is to the network. We have to broadcast what's happening and the previews and all that jazz there, that I have to eventually get a DVD and watch the fights later on. Going to this card here, where we're not doing a live preview show, we are showing the prelims, this is a card, like you said, that is so stacked, I will be at my seat before anything. The arena might be empty. You know, I'll eat, because obviously we're given our media meals, we're going to eat, and I'm going to go right to my seat with my coffee, and I'm just going to sit there and wait for the music to come on, because this is a crazy, crazy, crazy card, and we'll go through it right now to talk about what's going on. Jeff Hoagland, bantamweight, taking on Donnie Walker, two new additions to the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Donnie Walker, tough guy, 21 fights. Jeff Hoagland's just as tough. I'm going to go with Hoagland in this fight via submission, second round.
I'm going to go with Walker. I mean, he seems to be on a tear finishing everybody. I mean, he only has that one split decision and that decision. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Walker.
I just smell upset here.
Got to go with the momentum.
Yes, momentum plays, except when you're Rick Story, unfortunately. Very unfortunate. I know. Did I just take a dagger at your heart there? I apologize. Hopefully I'll see Ricky down in Vegas if he shows up.
I think the loss maybe sets up a future fight with Jake Ellenberger.
Oh, cue the broken record, ladies and gentlemen. You're dying to see that fight. You know, did you watch the tape? I told you specifically when I interviewed Rick Story, I asked him that question on your behalf. Did you watch his? Did you see his answer?
Didn't he say he would love to fight him again?
Did you see the answer?
I did not see the answer.
You are weak. I did it for you. I asked Rick Story the question on your behalf.
Is that what he said?
Yes, he would love to do it. He said, just, you know, he basically said, listen, he's at a higher level. I'm over here, but then he beats Alves. Now it's a good time. Because I asked the question before he fought Thiago Alves. But, you know, Jake Ellenberger's fighting Jake Shields next, apparently.
I think that'd be a great fight.
That's going to be an awesome fight. All right, continue on with UFC 132, a lightweight bout. Is this the bout where another one where you can't blink? Anthony Njokwani taking on Andre Winner?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are just going to throw bombs. I'm going to jump ahead of you here, and even though Winner has lost his last two, I think he will take this one.
I love it when you're wrong. Anthony Njokwani will win this fight either via knockout, TKO, or unanimous judge decision. Believe that. Brad Tavares taking on Aaron Simpson in a middleweight bout. We always tend to steer towards wrestlers, like I said, Tavares is on a 7-0 undefeated, but Aaron Simpson's been in there with some tough guys. He's 8-2. I am going to go with Aaron Simpson.
I'm going to go with Aaron Simpson as well. I mean, Tavares is a young kid. He's shown a lot, but I think this is too big a step up. Simpson's just a really tough guy and a great wrestler, so I'm going to go with Simpson.
The next fight, is this a fight where you shouldn't have a drink anywhere near you, whether it's a wobbly pop or a coffee or even a water, because this thing can get ugly real quick, or it could be just fast-paced for 15 minutes. Bantamweight scrap between Brian Bowles, former champion, against Takeya Mizugaki, who doesn't know how to not have a fight of the night performance. Ooh, I'll let you pick this one first.
I got a question. Is it more surprising that this is on the preliminaries, or is it more surprising that Gallard Roller is on the preliminaries?
We haven't got to the main card yet, and that'll probably explain why.
this fight surprised the hell out of me.
Sorry, are you talking about the ones airing on Sportsnet?
I'm just surprised that they're preliminaries. They're not on the pay-per-views.
Yes.
I mean, you have a former champion versus a former number one contender fighting on your preliminaries. That's an amazing fight. I mean, Mizugaki has all the amount of heart. That being said, I'm going with Bowles because he's got power in that right hand.
This is the byproduct of the amalgamation of bringing in the WEC. And what happens, you know, our prediction when they bring in Strikeforce. You're going to get cards that are completely stacked, even on the prelims, right?
Ridiculously stacked.
Based on your assessment of Brian Bowles, I think you are correct. I think Brian Bowles is just, he's a bit more patient than Mizugaki. I think Mizugaki is going to try and put the pressure on him, but Bowles lands one punch, right hand. It could be nappy time for a Japanese bantamweight.
I think the right hand that Bowles possesses is a fight changer. So
yeah, except when he couldn't land it against Dominic Cruz, because Dominic Cruz is a gong show. I can't wait to talk about that fight. All right, now these next two bouts will be airing on Rogers Sportsnet, commencing at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Make sure you tune in because these fights are going to be, shall I say, incredible. George Sotiropoulos coming off an unexpected loss to Dennis Seaver, who's also on this card in the main event, or in the main on the main pay-per-view card. We'll talk about him shortly. But George Sotiropoulos taking on Rafael Dos Anjos, who's coming off a loss to Clay Guida, which was that, remember the jaw injury that he suffered? Yeah, that wasn't good. He's defeated Terry Edom, Kyle Bradley, Rob Emerson. He's lost to Tyson Griffin and Jeremy Stevens, but those two, I mean, the loss to Tyson Griffin was a decision. Jeremy Stevens was a KO in the third round. He proved he can go with guys. He's got a ton of heart. George Sotiropoulos, as I mentioned, is coming off that loss to Dennis Seaver. He had tons of momentum that Dennis Seaver has taken away from him. How do you break down this fight and who pulls it off? Because this is, you know, This thing's hitting the ground.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a finish in this fight. I think Dos Anjos, if he can land a power punch on Sotiropoulos, it might be able to change the fight. I mean, Sotiropoulos doesn't have the best chin out there, but he's very good at avoiding, brawling with guys.
His boxing is good, though.
Yeah, I mean, his boxing is good, and he avoids getting those brawls where you're exchanging punches, one for one. I think Sotiropoulos has a slight advantage on the ground. It really depends on how the judges see it, but I'm going to go Sotiropoulos. I think he'll get the decision, but I'm worried that he'll spend too much time on his back, even if he is going for submissions, and the judges will still award it to Dos Anjos.
Do you know this name? Aldo Danielio de Oliveira? Cavarinha?
No.
That's who Dos Anjos has his black belt under. So, breaking down this fight here, I will pick George Sotiropoulos, although I will totally not be surprised if Dos Anjos just pulls this off in one of his crazy moves. And because this guy's just, his jaw, his chin, his heart is just unmatched. He's unbelievable. Regardless, I'll go Sotiropoulos. But what about this fight here? Melvin Gillard, or should I say Melvin the Young Assassin, I'm ticked off that the UFC should have a lightweight Grand Prix tournament. Gillard taking on Shane Roller, who's coming off. We were in the other room watching the knockout that he had. Who was it against? It was against, was it Thiago Tavares or Jamie Varner?
Tavares. He was losing the fight, yeah. And then he knocked him out.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, he's got power, but Melvin Gillard is just, you know, Kyle from Las Vegas, who calls in on a regular basis, understands my theory that speed kills, and I think in this fight here, speed kills. I think Melvin Gillard, if he shows up the way he's supposed to show up, and living up to the potential that he should have, he should defeat Shane Roller with his speed.
Yeah, and I mean, Shane Roller is a great wrestler, and he's one of the few wrestlers out there that's really incorporated jiu-jitsu into his wrestling, and I think it's one of the best styles that you could have. He's got power in his hands, but he's not extremely sharp. You know, I mean, we saw the Tavares fight, that Tavares was out pointing him on the feet until he got, you know, landed the big shot. I think Gillard's too fast, and he's got the power to back it up. His wrestling is good enough to keep this on the feet, so I'm going with Gillard as well.
And you'll be watching it on Rogers Sportsnet, am I correct?
For sure.
In high definition.
I'll be clipping this. I'll be putting the highlights together.
Is that
for
like
this.
The golden rule that Tyler Mason has to be clipping all of mixed martial arts fights?
Pretty much. They changed my schedule around, so I will be the guy putting the highlights together.
So you partially got that dream job now.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
So all the weak stuff, ladies and gentlemen, that you see on Rogers Sportsnet, it's Tyler. You do an awesome job for sure. All right, main card. You ready? Can you handle this? Because you got two thumbs up right now, and you're like that salivating dog. Dennis Seaver, all that momentum behind him taking on Matt Wyman. I think the momentum will continue. I think Dennis Seaver, whose ground game is very underrated, while Matt Wyman, very well-rounded, I just don't think he's going to be able to handle Dennis Seaver for a full three rounds. If he does, great. I think Seaver will pull off the unanimous judge's decision, but I will pick Dennis Seaver by TKO.
I'm going to go with Matt Wyman in this one.
That's why you cut.
And I'll tell you why. Here's a guy who went the distance with Jim Miller.
Yes.
He's standing, had like fight of the night performance with Sam Stout. So he shows he can stand. And I think he's got one of the more underrated.
Remember that liver shot?
Yeah, he's got one of the more underrated ground games in the lightweight division. I mean, he's not a guy who's a champion in wrestling. He's not a guy who's a champion in jiu-jitsu. But he puts everything together really well. And he came off that amazing fight over Cole Miller. I really think Wyman's really putting together everything right now in the best way possible for him, so I'm going to go with Wyman.
This is a case of one guy who's got, you know, momentum that everyone is talking about versus a guy that no one's talking about, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So you're going with the quiet momentum.
Yes.
Versus the earthquake / disaster fest that Dennis Seaver is.
Yes.
You're wrong. Carlos, the natural born killer Condit, taking on the stun gun, Dun Young Kim. This is the fight that you and I have been talking about for a very long time when it was first announced, because this potentially is not only fight of the night candidate, it's a style matchup of two exceptional fighters that, believe it or not, whoever wins this fight will be mentioned as a potential opponent for George St. Pierre.
And should be. I mean, I've been talking about it for a long time that people don't pay attention to Dong Hyun Kim as much as they should. Here's a guy who's running through everyone and anyone in the welterweight division. I mean, he even called out George St. Pierre in his last fight. I think if he spoke better English, people would have paid more attention to it. He's definitely a contender in my mind. And Carlos Condit coming off that huge knockout win over Dan Hardy. I'm going with Dong Hyun Kim. I think
he can control Carlos.
I think his control against the cage, and he is one of the more technical grapplers that I've ever seen. He's just amazing, in my opinion. He hardly does anything wrong. But Condit has that kind of brawling fighter mentality that's going to give him a problem. But I think I'm going with Dong Hyun.
If, again, our caveat every time we do predictions is we can't take into consideration when a fighter comes out with a silly game plan. If Carlos Condit allows Dong-Young Kim to clinch with him, and he's comfortable in the clinch, and he's comfortable on the ground. He can't potentially lose this fight because Dong-Young Kim has a smothering style and a way of forcing a submission out of you. If Carlos Condit uses his footwork and says, you know what, I don't have to engage with Dong-Young Kim. I'm a better striker, and I'm going to strike with this guy until I'm proven otherwise. Then maybe I'll clinch or I'll go to the ground with this guy. Carlos Condit plays that game plan. I think Carlos Condit will win this fight, whether it's on strikes, whether it's TKO, KO, or unanimous judge's decision. I think he'll do it if he decides to play with fire Dong-Young Kim's strength. I think you may be right. I think Dong-Young Kim can pull this off.
And you know what's funny with Condit? Most of the time he can use his range. This is one of the times that he can't really use his range. I mean, they're both almost the exact same height, and their reach is extremely similar.
We have 15 seconds each fight because this show is about to be over. Tito Ortiz, Ryan Bader, Young Buck Ryan Bader, I think will pull this off.
Yeah, this one won't take long. I think Ryan Bader's going to win it.
Vanderlei Silva, Chris Lieben in the co-main event. Will this one take long?
I think Vanderlei's got enough in the tank to take out Chris Lieben. I think he's faster and he's got those. I think he's still got power in his hands.
Heart says Vanderlei, head says Chris Lieben. Main event, Dominic Cruz taking on Uriah Faber. Dominic Cruz, I believe, will pull this one off because he's just simply too fast.
Yeah, this is, I guess, tough for me. I did train with Dominic Cruz at the beginning of his training camp, so I don't want to reveal too much about the fight. I think Dominic Cruz isn't going to do the same thing he did in the first one and tie up with Uriah. He tried to take him down a couple times. I think he's going to stay away, and I think he's just too good on his feet.
Absolutely. Thank you again for coming in.
Anytime.
All right, you've been listening to The Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590 in Toronto, and The Fan 960 in Calgary.